Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Kelly, I think it's only appropriate that we begin by asking for your opinion on Carmelo Hayes making his debut on Raw and losing to someone there's no shame in losing to. But sometimes timing and context is everything. What was your reaction when, one, the match was announced, and, two, when you saw Balor beat him clean?
When I saw Balor beat him clean, there was no surprise at all. It was going to end that way. Balor being in the match that he is. What would have been real interesting would have been to see this match if it had gone off without Balor in a go-home show as a main eventer on a pay-per-view. So my thought when I first saw Melo was, of course it's this week, because every time Wade has me on, it seems to be like this real fitting thing happens from NXT.
Totally, yep.
Now I know there's kind of a steady stream of people coming through, but this is a big one. Lot of those fans in the crowd don't know who Melo is. They will. Blows my mind that so many have to be introduced to him as good as he is. But he's a ready-made main roster talent. He could go there today, but for the fact that he has to drop that title at some point. And I don't know, did they have him drop it to Corbin? They've done that before with
Ooh.
Dolph Ziggler. But then I'll have to watch Baron Corbin NXT champion. So I'm not cheering for it, but whatever. I was very excited to see him, a little bummed to see him without Trick Williams, but let's not throw too many people at this crowd before they meet one. Let's just have them meet one at a time.
Yeah, so, okay, you just said it's a shame 100 people have to be introduced to Carmelo Hayes. Let's do it anyway. To people who are not whose familiarity with him is quite limited, and perhaps just him sitting at ringside in this match tonight, you say he's going to be a star. That's what I'm inferring from your, that's what it seems like you're conveying. Talk about his strengths. Talk about what might hold him back a little bit, too. Just talk to the audience about your impression of Carmelo Hayes and his NXT story so far and what you think his future is on the main roster.
What held him back a little bit at first was they were trying to present him as a babyface, and he was so self-aggrandizing that the crowd had trouble completely, totally latching onto him. And I would have thought he'd have the same issues as maybe Bianca Belair, who didn't exactly rush up the system, but she wasn't there super long either. And it could have been the same kind of issue for him with what kind of reactions does he get. But they've kept him down there longer than they had to. And one of the things he's gained the most is the ability to really keep things in a babyface context. He's only been purely on that side of the ledger for a few months, really. He did a tweener role for a while, which they do a little more on NXT, play around with. Find where people's strengths are. He's great on the mic, and he came in pretty decent in the ring already. He had less of a hill to climb than others there. He was a real natural talent, and has only gotten better there. His moves are very smooth. I knew if he did the fade away that crowd would really respond, and they did. And Corey sold it really great. Told everybody what the name of that move was. There aren't a lot of flaws in that game now that he knows how to convey a proper babyface, which is what he's being asked to do on the show now with he and Bron Breakker on a much more natural side of the ledger for both of them. That said, Hayes can play a really good heel too, especially a chicken shit heel. So this is a guy who's going to be very versatile for them. He's going to be able to do a lot for this show.
Did you read into the way that he was presented and how, Seth owes Carmelo for Carmelo helping him out last Tuesday, being there for him? Is that setting up an alliance for Carmelo to, you know, he could be called up to Raw and still be champion. We saw that with the women's tag champs. But is it more likely he loses the title and gets called up. But is this planting seeds, you know, now or a little bit down the line for when he shows up, a buddy storyline with Seth that then maybe turns to Carmelo being a heel? Or does Carmelo just show up and attack Seth because Seth didn't appreciate him enough? Or, like, what do you think they're setting up, if anything? And the third option, you know, friend or foe, is they're not setting up anything. We're just reading too much into it. This is just part of co-promoting NXT, and they just wanted to get him on TV and kind of see how he'd do and how fans would react.
I was a little worried they were going to do it tonight. And then I realized with just one day before he has to work babyface against Baron Corbin, that wouldn't make a lot of sense. So my fears were assuaged when I thought a little bit more of that, because they will be the main event tomorrow night. I think that this is probably just cross promotion, but they saw these two interact in a pretty fun way last week on the first week of Gold Rush on NXT, and it continued this week, and it can just be something they do organically, and then when the time comes, they say, well, we can always do the thing with Seth because they already have the history, so part of that story is already written for us. Just like they didn't have the Finn Balor and Seth Rollins story go the way it did 7.5 years ago so they could pay it off now. But then they used it for the storyline. And I get the feeling that they just did some co-promotion, but it could end up being sort of a happy accident.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think is a realistic ceiling for Carmelo? And what do you fear based on past call-ups and people with his skill set, the assets that he has? Do you also fear anything in terms of how WWE might use him in a role less than what you think is nearer that ceiling?
I've become pretty realistic about people from NXT being called up and what their ceiling is once they're in a different environment. But Melo is the only male I see on that roster as a probable future world champion. The only one I feel that strongly about. There's nobody else that I would say it's certainly going to happen. They might do it with Braun, and when the time comes, I'm going to say, I don't really think he's all that, but, you know, whatever, they're doing it. Like, he may get pushed to that level. But Melo is the one guy I can see getting pushed to that level and it feeling really earned. And I've felt that way for probably a year or so, probably the entirety of since NXT 2.0, let's say that. He's the one that I feel on the men's side of things is the surest fire future world champion. I don't have a lot of fears for him unless injuries happen, and injuries have not been a thing for him. I think the basement for this guy is US or Intercontinental champion. I definitely think he will hold one of those first. But I honestly think that's his basement.
Yeah. 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 It's interesting. The history of NXT call-ups people are right to feel nervous about how, especially if Vince McMahon has his hands on things, how talent from NXT will be presented and featured on Raw. Do you have this on for sure the top third or fourth of how NXT call-ups have been used when they've just dabbled in appearing on the main roster, you know, compared to Ciampa and Gargano and whoever, you know, just talk about that and the presentation of him this last few weeks ranks.
Of Carmelo going to the main roster here?
Yeah, compared to others, where does he rank? Yeah.
In terms of presentation, what they put into it, I'm struggling to find somebody who was brought up better in their first real appearance. Especially since Triple H took over, one of the things that he unfortunately was the weakest at was knowing that he was no longer in his bubble. He knew all these. He had intimate knowledge of everybody that he was taking from NXT and putting on the main roster. But he had so much trust in that product that he forgot the difference between NXT ratings and Raw and SmackDown ratings. He was throwing a lot of them out there cold to die, and fans would take it out on the talent who had done some great work on NXT, but how were they to know? And it seems like something has changed in that they realize that legwork has to be put into this. And part of that might just be because Melo is, he's got such a strong upside that you don't want to botch this in any way, so you're going to be careful in every single way you can. But in terms of comparing to the last couple of years, most of them don't even come close. They just got brought up, thrown out there cold, and given essentially nothing.
All right, well, let's pause there and introduce ourselves and then move on to phone calls and conversation about more aspects of the show, the final hype on Raw for Money in the Bank, a lot to talk about, including it's not just Carmelo Hayes who was in that match we're talking about. It was also Finn Balor, who I think they've done a really nice job getting a lot out of as a world title challenger to Seth, who I think people wouldn't have been excited to see as a challenger to Seth if they were told they're going this direction for the Money in the Bank world title match before the hype started. So we'll get into that too. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the Monday, June 26th, 2023 episode of WWE Monday Night Raw. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show. I am the founder and editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter, predating the internet. I launched it back in 1987 when I was in high school and have made it my full-time job since graduating college, actually kind of during college it was. And I've covered wrestling through all kinds of media advancements, including podcasting. And it's certainly among my favorite formats, although I really like writing too, kind of miss when that was the main thing I did. But I love the format of being able to talk to a variety of co-hosts and callers and interact with emails and have quick turnaround time reviewing shows like tonight's Raw. And I thank you for making us part of your podcast listening schedule. And I am also the editor of pwtorch.com, our main news, commentary, and TV and pay-per-view report website, and also the host of other podcasts besides this one. Tomorrow on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast, our Blue Logo show, on the flagship edition, Javier Machado will be joining me. He is a specialist in New Japan, along with other promotions. He follows just about everything. But with Forbidden Door taking place last night, he'll be joining me on the flagship, and we'll talk about Forbidden Door and then also Money in the Bank and the state of AEW and Collision and more. If you have questions or topics or just things you want to vent about and you want to be part of the mailbag segment on the flagship, now's the time to email WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com, and we are likely to get to your email during the show, which we'll be recording late in the afternoon or early evening. So you got some time to send that in if you're listening to this show on a timely basis. That's WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. And then later this week, we'll be covering Dynamite and SmackDown and Collision once again. And then VIP members will get to hear the VIP exclusive post-PLE roundtable that I'll be hosting Saturday after Money in the Bank. It'll be a busy, long, and fun Saturday with not only Money in the Bank from overseas and our VIP post show that'll go up right afterwards, but then I'll be covering Collision, and we'll have a post show. And Patrick Moynihan will be my co-host for that. It's been a while since he's been able to co-host, but he covers Rampage for PWTorch.com and also is part of the PW Torch 90s Passcast and with Alex McDonald. And he'll be joining me as co-host Saturday night, and we hope you'll join us for that live if you can make it work, and call and email also. That'll be the pivot point, along with Dynamite this week, away from the Forbidden Door hype, and we'll be full-fledged on Collision in the CM Punk business. After, I think, a good and encouraging showing from him in a lot of ways the past couple of weeks. A big week ahead here in our coverage on our podcast. Some of it will be VIP exclusive, and some of it won't. Our post shows and the flagship free for everyone, although the third-party ad spots and our in-house plugs are removed for VIP members for a streamlined listening experience. So go VIP if you haven't, pwtorch.com/govip, and you can catch up on our Forbidden Door Roundtable that Todd Martin, Rich Fan, and I recorded last night after AEW New Japan's Forbidden Door pay-per-view. The other voice you hear so far on tonight's show is Kelly Wells. He covers NXT with written reports, rotating with Bruce Hazelwood on Tuesday nights at pwtorch.com, and he is also the host of PWT Talks NXT, a free show on Tuesdays on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup, and the host, along with Tom Staupe, of NXT 8 Years Back, where they look back every week at the NXT TV show from 8 years ago and review that and just kind of compare what's going on now to then and their impressions looking back on that show. And they talk some other stuff too, like movies. Kelly, it's great to have you here on the Rob Poe Show.
Good to be here. 8 years back is really fun lately because we've got right now Finn Balor giving impassioned promos going toward this main event feud with Seth Rollins. 8 years back, we are watching videos of Finn Balor at home with a long segment about how much he likes playing with Legos. that's something that happened 8 years ago on NXT. So fun stuff there. Yes, I too love writing about wrestling, NXT especially, because last week it was very good. That's easy to write about. And sometimes it's very bad because it's a developmental show, and that's maybe even more fun to write about. I'm a New Japan completist. I dabble in just about all things wrestling, even beyond New Japan, but I have not gotten to watch Forbidden Door yet, not until Wednesday. So one major match was spoiled for me, but that was my own fault. I looked at Twitter at a time I shouldn't have. So in a couple of days, I'll partake.
Fortunately, there's nothing that you could know about that show in terms of a match result that would take substantially away from the enjoyment of the match.
Right.
Yeah,
and that's what that show is. It's a little, I don't want to say house show exactly, but it's just kind of a super show where you probably know what's going to happen, but it doesn't change anything at all.
Yeah, yep. All right, very good. So let's move on and give out the phone numbers. And and see where conversation goes from here. If you want to give us a call, the phone number, if you haven't called yet, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know that you're not just calling to listen in, but that you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We'd love to get your opinions. We'd love to hear from you. If you listen to our show on delay and can't join us live, you can always email us with your questions. If you do watch the TV shows that we cover live while they're airing, even if you can't listen to the post show live, your emails can be part of the show, and then you can listen back later. All right, let's get to phone calls. And we've got William from San Diego, who will be up in a moment. Kyle from Baltimore, too. But we've got Dean from Birmingham, Alabama, giving us a call. Dean, welcome to the show. What are your thoughts on Rob?
Hey. Oh, man, really great storylines and how WWE puts their storylines together. They let it run its course for a little while, you know, and putting things – they actually make you care about the pay-per-view coming up, Money in the Bank, and not just that, but the other pay-per-views behind it with the stories and Cody Rhodes and his journey, and really excited about that. Try not to ruin Open Door for you guys, but I'll just say this. You know, I understand there's a huge difference between, and I'm not an AEW hater, okay, but I do watch it, but I'm just like, Tony Khan needs to take more serious, stop letting the inmates run the asylum and get their stuff together. And anyway, there was the little scrum start off with Sting and Darby Allin, and there was a little cheesy, I guess, segment. But Chris Jericho came out there mad with his bat and hit a water bottle, and it it hit a reporter in the head out front and just stuff like that. It's just like, come on, guys. But to me, WWE's like, they have their storylines together, their agents and people just kind of put their foot down with wrestlers or, you know, tell them, no, don't do that, let's not do that, or take away from, you know, their big stories and segments. But anyway, that's my thoughts. But anyway, what's your guys' opinion? And anyway, thank you.
What's your opinion on what specifically? On the quality of the storylines is kind of your broad statement or something specific? I just wasn't quite sure. Sorry.
Yes. Storylines, the product, and kind of, do you guys like the way WWE's direction they're headed? And, you know, people.
Dean, let me pull this. Let me ask you this, kind of help us answer, I think, where you're heading. And what about tonight's show stood out as an example of a strength? You don't have to contrast it with AEW necessarily, but in terms of what you when you're watching the show, you go, yeah, this is good. This is good pro wrestling storytelling. That's a strength of WWE right now.
As far as like Cody Rhodes and his journey, where he started out, and I know a lot of people could argue maybe he shouldn't have won. I do. That could have gone either way. I do like Roman Reigns, his championship reign, but I like the build. It's the build up, and there's a payoff, you know. So,
sure.
I know Cody Rhodes is. They're going somewhere with it. It's not just gonna fall. You know, the rug's gonna be pulled out from under them, or tomorrow it's gonna. Anyway.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I gotcha. Thanks, Dean.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. That helps me.
Yeah.
So I think Cody is a good example, Kelly, of what WWE does well, in part because Cody was in AEW doing something similar in a very different context with a different head booker in Tony Khan. And there is a contrast. And what Cody is doing now is more successful than it was in AEW. Part of that is I think Cody learned from the AEW experience. I think he's a better wrestling mind when it comes to how to feature himself based on some hard lessons in AEW. But I think the structure of WWE is more helpful to what he needs. He's more disciplined on the microphone. He's got more direction, more focus. There's a purpose to things. He's not just kind of out there and sort of meandering in a, you know, and I really like Cody as a performer, but there were times in AEW quite often where it was like, okay, this is starting to go off in different directions and it's not real focused or disciplined. And he just was in, you know, the term Codyverse got popularized because everything he did was sort of in his own little corner. And that was part of course, early AEW where everyone was kind of in their own, they were their own chemists kind of creating their own concoctions in the corner of the locker room and then given segments on TV without that cohesion. With Cody, there is cohesion. You know, the opening segment, interacting with Dominic, it's a clear face and Cody, clear heel. And Dominic, the fans are super into it. They put Cody on TV multiple times. And one of the things that I like about what WWE does is they interview wrestlers about their match. We didn't get it from Damian Priest tonight, which is kind of weird. They're usually better about that. But Cody not only caught a promo in the ring, but also backstage at Kathy Kelly. And he's just so nice. Like, not all wrestlers are nice to interviewers. Even baby faces sometimes, you know, you can kind of, they treat them with contempt. And this isn't just a Rock Kevin Kelly bit type thing, but where it's just like, you can tell their mind is elsewhere and they don't, in real life, respect the person holding the microphone. And Cody is just so pleasant and professional in the way that he approaches the interview segments. And so I think to the type of fan that likes WWE more than what AEW presents, and there's no, it doesn't mean they're a better fan or a worse fan. It's just they're clearly marketing to different types of fans, and you can like both. I do. Cody's a good fit, and the structure benefits him. And then he goes out and has good, solid matches. He's not a top tier athlete with the widest moveset, but he's a real timeless. He's got a timeless style that's really professional and efficient and effective. And so, you know, when Dean brings that up, I'm glad he brought up Cody because I think Cody is a good prototype for something that WWE does well in the context of, hey, Cody's going to have a match later. Let's talk to him during the show and actually have him build it up and not just not mention it for an hour and a half. And then, oh, that's right, that's the main event. And he gets a chance to really establish his character. So those are some of my thoughts on that. Kelly, you can talk about Cody. You can also broaden that out to a larger issue of what Dean was bringing up.
Yeah, I think Cody is a real success for WWE. And obviously, when they brought him in there, they weren't going to treat him as second rate, because then why would anybody else want to go from that company to this one? But yes, I agree that he had to have some kind of journey. And I will not argue at all that he should have beaten Roman Reigns. I was surprised so many people thought he was going to beat Roman Reigns. And I would go so far as to say it would be a huge mistake for Roman to lose it to anybody who was not a massive part of the bloodline, if not in the bloodline itself. And I've thought for probably 2 years that it would be Jay who beats him. And I'm still going with that. But yes, I would have thought it would have been a mistake, just because of Roman having the championship reign he had. In just about any other situation, I would have said Cody should go over and become champion here at WrestleMania. But yes, the story has to be told correctly. Yeah, it does seem like he's doing a little bit better there. He was on TV regularly on AEW, but that kind of gets me to a bigger, I don't know. One of the things I really like about WWE in comparison to AEW is that, you know, people are going to be on and off TV every now and then. People will disappear from TV and come back later, fresher or whatever. But in AEW, it seems like they're way more likely to disappear during a bona fide push. And that's very bizarre to me. Like somebody not having something to do who also hasn't been winning on TV makes perfect sense. But it's the ones who seem to be featured and are then gone. And then a mega fan will say, oh yeah, they're all over this like eighth different means of content. Something that's just not on my radar at all. But I don't know. I don't want to make it a versus thing, because there are a lot of things to like about what both of them are doing. But part of the reason it's easier for me to stay engaged with WWE is because of those consistently told stories and of them seemingly having more weeks, using more weeks to build a pay-per-view than AEW really does, even though AEW has 3 months to do them. And we talked about that, I think, Wade, the last time, where they had all these months to work toward the four-way and the other matches on that show, and just kind of didn't. So if it's a meandering answer, it's because it's kind of a big picture question, and I don't know exactly where it needs to land. But I will say also, at large on this episode, I thought it was really cohesive, and I thought it was just as good a go-home show as I've seen in quite a while. Bringing some new faces to TV, putting some finishing touches on some feuds. It left me pretty excited for Money in the Bank.
And they've just done a good job with Dominic. I mean, it snuck up on them, but they didn't ignore it. They didn't fight it, and they've enhanced it. They've put Dominic in a position to win. They've put Cody. I know, you know, and understandably so, some people are like, Cody was supposed to beat Roman Reigns. He's in a feud with Brock Lesnar, and now he's fighting Dominic at a pay-per-view. It's like, well, it's not the world title match. It's not the Bloodline Civil War. It's not the Money in the Bank match. They don't need to spend a huge Cody match at Money in the Bank. So, you know, understand there's a certain amount. You don't want to load up every PLE with every greatest match that any top wrestler can possibly have. And if it's something short of that, then, you know, what are they doing? It there's a strategy to it, and it makes sense. And Cody against Dominic is not the biggest match from a championship contender standpoint. It's not Cody's biggest challenge, but for a lot of people, it's going to be the match they're most looking forward to because of the type of hype that they've done the past few weeks, because Dominic is silver as a heel, and because fans in WWE and WWE allows them to do this based on the way they tell their stories. You can get wrapped up in that narrative structure of WWE and want to see Cody show up Dominic and love seeing Dominic sell and be humiliated or have to back away. You know he's going to cheat. You know he's going to hide behind Rhea Ripley, but you have faith that Cody's going to win in the end. And it's a feel-good story, just like a scripted TV show or movie provides that kind of emotional investment. And so I think this is a valuable match, and I thought tonight was another really effective job making that feel like, yeah, it's not the most important match, but it might be, and it's not going to be the most, like, star rating-wise, highly rated match. It's not going to be this athletic showcase. It's not going to be, you know, Omega Ospreay, Okada, Danielson. It's going to be entertaining, and there's going to be a lot of crowd heat. And that's part of what makes pro wrestling great. It's not just about big moves and you know, dives and kickouts and blood and pretending you broke your neck or pretending that you're convulsing. It can be on a lighter side, really entertaining. And I think they did a good job with that tonight. And I think Cody and Dominic have played into that well. One thing that stood out is just the lack of hype for Cody versus Priest. Like, as much as we're complimenting WWE, this was an area where I think they came up short. To me, I'm trying to figure out why. I mean, it got mentioned in passing in the opening segment. You didn't hear from Priest. I think you could have even not known that was going to be the main event of Raw if you weren't, like, just really paying close attention. And it's just not like WWE. And I don't know if that was an oversight or intentional, but you would think they'd want to let people know Cody's wrestling, and it's against Damian Priest, who had that great match with Bad Bunny. He's a big part of Judgment Day. Did that jump out to you as an issue on the show, Kelly?
100%. And we see that on NXT quite a bit more than we do the main roster, because NXT will sometimes, in a weaker week, on a weaker episode, they'll have a main event that they believe in as a main event, but they don't believe it so much that they want you to know that there isn't something better at the end of the show. When there is a match that could be iffy in terms of star power, especially, or in ring, they go a lot lighter on it. So I'm kind of always at the ready for those things. If they're doing that on a main roster show, I start to wonder why, because in NXT, it's like clockwork. The weeks they don't do that, if you go half an hour without knowing what the main event is, then you know there's something they don't love about it, or they don't necessarily totally trust in terms of...
Or they're not going to deliver it.
...holding viewers. Yes, indeed. Or if, if it's going to be like a Ciampa Miz thing, and they don't want you to get all excited about a match with no ending. And yes, it did stick out to me, too, that Priest didn't say anything on the way to this. Obviously, they know what they have with Cody and Dom, because this went on last, and you could have put Finn on last since he's going for the world championship, but they put Cody on last. And I get Cody's very magnetic, but as you said, this doesn't have to be a big match for Cody, but because Dominic is attracting heat so well, it became one anyway, almost to the point where I would love to see the world burn and watch Dominic win this. Not clean, of course, because he can't, but it would just be very funny, and it could lead to some crazy things if he won this in the wrong way. You could even do Cody beats him, but he's just so sick of him that he won't release a hold, and it's a reverse decision. And so Cody won visually, but then Dominic can, in his next feud, talk about how he beat Cody Rhodes. Gosh, I like that more than I wish I did. Yeah, I think they know what they have with this, and I just love what Dom is doing. Some of these second-generation guys can wrestle, but they can't be professional wrestlers. And Dom can kind of wrestle, but he really knows how to be a professional wrestler.
Exactly. And, boy, the crowd heat helps so much. I mean, how can you not love your job when your job is to get boos and you're getting more boos than anybody? And I love the bit where he's about to talk, he tries to talk, and then the fans boo so loud that he, Rhea Ripley, takes over. And then, you know, he whispers something to Rhea, and Rhea has to say it because the fans are so loud and booing Dom. And it works. It's fun.
Oh, yeah. I ate up every bit of that just like I was supposed to. This is what first time wrestling fans that I watch with, this is what they latch on to. Just they want to see someone with a punchable face and a stupid look and a stupid mullet. They
exactly.
just want him
yep.
to get beat up. They don't care yep. about the belts or match quality. They want to see a guy get beat up.
Yep. It's fun stuff. All right. Our number, if you want to get in line on our phone lines, it's 347-215-8558. Push 1 if you want to be on the show. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear from a first-time caller, too. Don't be bashful. No pressure. Just let us know something that you stood out on the show, or if you want to react to something we're saying, agree or disagree, you are invited to do so. William in San Diego, you are up now. Thank you for holding. Thanks for calling. Good to hear from you again. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Yeah, thank you guys for taking the call. I had a big picture question or a more general question about the Money in the Bank match and the briefcase. It kind of relates, I guess, to the women's Money in the ladder match a little bit, in that I've been seeing a lot of people say, you know, things like Becky and or Bayley shouldn't win the briefcase because they're already, you know, at that top level, and they should use the briefcase to establish someone new, like Io or Selena or whoever. And I don't know, I'm kind of feeling like a little bit like, you know, that line that Becky used today in the show when she looked at Rhea and she said, I don't need that title. That title needs me. I kind of feel that way a little bit about the briefcase, because it feels like in recent years that promise of using the briefcase to elevate someone hasn't really panned out. And I'm finding it hard to get excited about the potential of, you know, someone like an Io winning that briefcase when we've seen so many duds in recent years with the likes of Nikki winning the briefcase, that Liv Morgan cash in. It was exciting at the moment. Like, you know, all of them, they cash in immediately, but then after that, it's like, you know, they kind of like deflate almost immediately. And even on the men's side, you know, you got Austin Theory. I don't think he's in a much different spot than he would have been if he hadn't won the briefcase. Someone like Otis, I mean, he won it, and then he lost the briefcase to Miz. So I feel like they need a big name that can kind of bring some, that can kind of rehab the briefcase a little bit and make it feel like a bit of more of a big deal. I don't know if you guys agree or disagree with that premise.
Yeah, I think it's good to mix it up. If for no other reason broadly than a lack of predictability, that, you know, it's like the Rumble, it has to be a big name because they're going to main event WrestleMania. But with Money in the Bank, it doesn't have to be, and they can do different things. I think they want to keep the percentage kind of high so they can keep touting it. You know, 80% of winners go on to win, cash in successfully, and that kind of thing. But it doesn't mean you don't want to shake it up. On the men's and the women's side, having two Money in the Bank matches, you can kind of do one of each. Kelly, I know you're really into the Royal Rumble. You can convey how you are about Money in the Bank relative to the Rumble, and then comment on what William had to say about, you know, big names versus elevating people, or sort of sometimes it's a joke or a comedy type win.
I do love the Rumble more than anything in the world, or anyone. Let's just be honest. So believe me, when you said the words Royal Rumble, I was like, there's my opening. The first 5 years the Rumble existed, my favorite thing about it was that it could exist to be won by a star, or it could exist to elevate somebody. And I think it's the best single match type in the world to elevate somebody in one night. But now it can't be used that way. They can take a chance on either the men or the women. The men, they can do it because there's two championships, or because the women could main event, or the men or the women can do it because at least one of the men's champions is going to be main event worthy of WrestleMania. So it's, they can take chances, but they don't do it very often, and I understand that. With Money in the Bank, I definitely dig where the caller's coming from, because some of them are going to be duds, but that's kind of the risk you take when you use that one night to elevate somebody. The good thing about what they can do with the women here is Becky or Bayley can win this and it can still seem like a big deal, even without elevating somebody, because the men's will just, as a matter of fact, will definitely elevate somebody because nobody's on that level yet. You've got a lot of different ways they can go, and it just seems like it's going to be a next level step up for whoever's on that side. So they do have the luxury, since there are two, of using one to elevate and using one to just remind us who somebody is. I really liked Becky's little mini story today here. They gave you a couple of hints that she would definitely win it. One, they said the only thing you haven't done is win the Money in the Bank match. They had the scene with Rhea, the kind of scene that they really usually only do when a match is going to happen later. But they also did something that would make you think she's definitely going to lose, which is she was the one who went up and got the briefcase today. And they don't usually spend that on the person who's also going to win the match. So yep. I like what they did with her, regardless of where it ends up, because we all expect Becky's going to be involved in the finish of that match, even if there's only two people involved in the finish of that match. I just don't see any way around that. But I wouldn't be against seeing this as an Io Sky win to see the next step of her and Bayley and whatever they're doing, or to have Bayley steal it from
right.
steal win from Io Sky, which is probably the more correct storyline way to go about this. And then see, and that's the one way Becky's not necessarily there at the top at the end. Because I know that Io can work both as a heel or a face. I like her a little more as a heel, I think. And I know she can carry a championship and make it seem important. But yeah, I dig what he's saying. But I would like, every year, I'd like one of them to be used to elevate somebody, even if the other one is just establishing what we already know.
On the women's side, how do you feel about the segments where, at least this wasn't wrestlers just marching out one after another, it was billed as a summit, and everyone was invited, so we knew they'd all be there. It didn't feel overly convenient, like, you know, certain segments that WWE does when they want to hype a match. Did it feel like a natural enough exchange with everybody sort of freestyling, or did it feel like everyone was sort of waiting their turn and making scripted comments that felt a little too orchestrated? So graded on that. But then the second part of my question is, regardless of how I feel about that, I think it effectively gave everybody – it gave everybody a chance to make their case. You know, Becky, I want to win it as an irritant. Bayley, I want to win it because I'm Bayley. Oh, and Io might win too, but, you know, people know I'm going to win if it's between us. You know, like that kind of a demeanor and attitude, and Io reacting to it. So you play into that a little bit more. And then Trish, this legend who's never been in, much less won Money in the Bank. And so you're thinking, oh, well, this would be a good thing to, you know, give her a bringing point. She's a big star. She's, I would argue, improving on the microphone week by week and getting more comfortable and into this heel role. And then you've got Zelina Vega, who's out there making her case for being good enough on the microphone and the scrappy underdog, you know, can she, might she, will she type of baby face working from underneath. And then you got Zoe, who's, you know, a call-up who, Kelly, I'm curious for your take on, and I could have brought that up earlier and could elaborate now, but how she's doing as somebody who a Money in the Bank win would certainly be valuable and would fit the heel waiting around to cash in on a baby face, but you got a whole year to do it. So it doesn't have to be anything that's immediate, that immediately makes storyline sense. So to me, they hit all the right notes in this, and they did lay it out as William said, where you can have a big name, a credible name win it, not someone who's just for sure going to lose, and there's not really a comedy heel in this match. So yeah, I mean, I'm almost getting deep into just, you know, previewing the match and the pros and cons of each, but your thoughts on that segment in particular, kind of the two parts. Do you like the format, and then do you agree with me that it did set up a scenario where each wrestler made a good case for themselves?
Yeah, it wasn't the slickest scene ever. It felt equal parts overwritten and underwritten. lots of sound bites, but not the cleanest in terms of knowing who was supposed to speak next or anything. Undisciplined at times. All that out of the way, I really like this as a format. I really like the visual of all of them being there. I like as well. It seems so obvious, but you wouldn't have to put it there. So I like that they did. I really like the idea of doing this and getting a mission statement from everybody. So that part worked for me. Zoe could be an interesting dark horse here, and maybe she's not a dark horse. I'm not the first person to say she could win this, but she, when she was about to leave NXT, it was really obvious. They had gotten her more, she was a babyface for kind of a while, and she was okay, but I had liked her first match as a heel a little better. It just seemed like a more natural fit, and they got her back on that side of the aisle, and it started working almost immediately, and I knew when she got her championship match that she was going to lose it, and that was going to be it. She was going to move up after that, and a couple of callers lamented that she didn't win, and I said, oh, she won. She won a whole bunch more money. She's going north. This is the end for her there. She's done everything they can to get one more job out of her. So, yeah, I don't know about the story told so far, but I think that in her specific heel role, she's somebody who's kind of made to hold that briefcase. The briefcase, callers are right, the briefcase can't – it doesn't work to elevate everybody. But I think that Zoe's the right kind of character that it can actually elevate her.
William, I'll throw back to you. I know we kind of covered a lot there. Anything you want to reply to or focus in for us to answer more specifically also?
Yeah, no. Answer a few questions there that I also had. That was a good discussion. I also wanted to hone in a little bit more. You briefly touched on it, but the Rhea and Becky exchange backstage. Every now and then they hint at that future feud. They drop little, I guess like appetizers of it. And I thought tonight we had a really good one because I think this is like the first time there was like an actual verbal exchange. And I don't know, something about the setting of the two of them being backstage in that like tight hallway, kind of like close to each other. It felt really, just really got me excited for whenever that match comes up. My guess is probably WrestleMania. What do you guys feel about how they've been kind of slowly building that feud? And I guess in a larger sense, so the thing that has me excited about the match is that it's something that you kind of don't see that often in WWE, which is two very big stars in their own right that have been kind of kept separate ways, been kept separate from each other. Finally, and the anticipation of the two of them finally, coming to a head. Real quickly, I also had some questions about the that little comment that Becky had about, calling Rhea something like a side piece, main event side piece, something like that. It kind of felt real. It feels like Rhea hasn't really done much with the title, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. Was it a good idea for Becky to point that out, should they have failed from pointing that out?
Well, certainly better for a face to say it to a heel who has the credentials of Becky than vice versa with a heel saying it about a babyface title reign. Kelly, comment on anything that William said there.
Sorry, my headphone popped out for just a second, but I got it. It was – I liked this scene. You can't – I like the setting of this scene as well. This is not one where you can have Dom be a major player. You've got to keep him more or less out of these scenes. And even if he's there, just not have it get too goofy. I think that this is going to be WrestleMania also. There's a long time to go until WrestleMania, but I wouldn't be surprised if this was dragged to then. They could make this SummerSlam also. But given where both women are right now in the eyes of fans, I think that WrestleMania at present makes the most sense. Part of the reason that tempers my enthusiasm about the idea of Becky winning is that Becky should have to fight for it in this role. And cashing in on somebody is not ideal for this Becky, especially on this kind of Rhea. Like, this kind of Rhea could cash in on this kind of Becky, and it would be no problem. But I don't know about the other way around. But we have had it where baby faces win, and their cash-in is that they schedule a match because they don't want to take advantage
right.
of somebody. And so that would be fine also.
Did it come across like Becky was going, you know, I don't need to win a Money in the Bank to get a title shot. It's a little bit beneath me, but I'll do it just to be an irritant to Ripley. I when I heard her say that, I was like, does that hurt the Money in the Bank concept if she's – or am I, you know, reading too much into that? Or is it obvious that that's what she was saying? That was running through my head like, yeah, I don't need to win this to become champion or be recognized as great. And this is sort of maybe leaking out a little bit that she thinks, is this really the match I should be in at this point in my career? But I'm going to frame it in a way so that when I don't win, it wasn't something that I was setting out to win. I was only trying to win it to be an irritant, but it wasn't like this major goal. And then, like you said, her climbing the ladder, is that a tell that you got your Becky moment, your visual, because it's not going to happen. If it was going to happen, they wouldn't give that visual to you because they want to save it for when she actually wins. What do you think of the psychology of what Becky said, and did you read into it the way that I did?
I would love to say that you're overthinking it, but if you are, then I'm right there with you. I thought very much the same thing, and I didn't think it was so overt that it hurt the concept, but she knows that we know that she can get a title shot anytime, that she's that level. But I think she likes the idea of lording it over Rhea. And what'd she say? Make you squirm? That's what it was at the end of it.
Yeah,
I really like that psychological mind game she played with Rhea, especially because Rhea keeps it so confident looking all the time. To see her even give the slightest hint of worry at somebody who she knows is very successful and who she knows can beat anyone, I thought that worked pretty well. I really dug this scene. I hope this match doesn't get thrown out there too soon, but given this company's commitment to long-term storytelling over the last couple of years, I'm trusting that they will not throw this out there too cold.
William, back to you. Again, did we miss anything that you want us to bring up or react to, or do you want to bring up a new subject?
No, I think you touched everything there.
Great.
I also wanted to talk about I think you touched on this last week, but to kind of bring that subject back, the Kevin Owens, the direction of his character, I feel like it's coming a little bit one note. And I feel like it's the kind of thing that if, you know, Vince McMahon were still like publicly in charge of creative and whether he is or not, you know, controller, we don't know how much of creative he's controlling right now, or if it's all Hunter or if Vince is, you know, doing more than we know. But I feel like if he were in control, like back in a couple of years back, this is the kind of thing where people would be complaining that, you know, oh, they're turning KO into a one-note gimmick or whatever. They're kind of turning him into a joke. And it's that kind of old thing that they used to say about Vince that, you know, don't let him know that you can do comedy because then that'll be the only thing that he'll let you do. And it's kind of been like that. Like, it feels like they're pushing the whole, you know, over-the-top anger management thing a little too much with Kevin for my taste. Is that kind of the feeling that you're also getting?
Kelly, I'm interested in your thoughts first. What do you like this? Do you agree with William's framing of it? Even if you do, is that a bad thing for now? Does it work in terms of Sammy and Kale playing off each other, given the place that they're at post Bloodline feud?
I understand William's framing of it, but I actually love this version of KO. And I love every version of KO. So let me just get that out of the way. Every time he does something, he is so committed to it that he makes it work. He could have been given the Red Rooster gimmick and made it a main event gimmick. That is how good Kevin Owens is. I just think he's so committed to the bit, whatever it is. And I will say also that this company knew how funny Kevin Owens was from the beginning, because he was funny in his initial heel role in NXT. Like, even though his first night was that really horrifying, badass beatdown of Sami Zayn at the end of TakeOver, and that was where we really got to know who he was going to be, he was still doing funny stuff on the mic, whether it was just messing with announcers as he sat in on the announce table, making Byron Saxton wet his pants, whatever, those kind of things. They've known he could do that for a long time. He's very, very versatile. So I like what they're doing in terms of having this team play off one another, not just because it's funny, but because it's also like KO's kind of a sociopath. Like, he forgets that he's supposed to like Matt Riddle. Like, he needs that valid from Sammy. He's like, really, do we? Like, he's doing this for Sammy because Sammy's a good guy and he wants to be good with Sammy. But he's still kind of bad in his heart and, like, doesn't care about people in his heart. I actually think that this is one of the more nuanced characters they have right now, even though his delivery can seem one note, because he's a bad guy who's in a babyface tag team. I just kind of like what they're doing here.
Yeah, I'm really with you, Kelly. I get in all the way to where I get William's criticism, and I get people who think this is too one note and too comedic, but I don't see it as a big diversion from stuff that Kevin has done. He's shown range, but it's not like this breaks from something that he's consistently been and it feels lower card or one note. I think they've explored it effectively. Sammy, you know, going, hey, you know, can you make it through the night? And I think people, you know, the way WWE promotes and presents the product, they want you to anticipate and look forward to something that is sort of fun to watch, even if it's done over and over, because eventually, and usually, I shouldn't say usually, I don't want to frame it that way, but often it doesn't overstay its welcome or run its course. And with KO, I'm curious where this leads. Does it have an endpoint, or are they just doing it because they kind of, it wasn't even a master plan. They're just like, hey, how about if I snap this week because Sammy's so obsessed with the bloodline and it's getting under my skin. And then some people were laughing off camera, at, you know, as soon as they said cut, like, oh my God, you're good at that. And Kay was like, yeah, this is fun. And said, yeah, let's do that next week, but don't make it about the bloodline. Just like be irritated with other things. And to me, it actually feels organic. It doesn't feel like Vince McMahon is just going, oh, Chad Gable's good at comedy, so we'll never treat him as a serious wrestler. It comes across as like, almost like Dominic, where they just sort of stumbled into something that they are now going, that they're doing more with for longer than they planned. Right now, KO is not being presented as a world title threat. So you want to be entertaining in a different kind of way than just seeking that validation that you're the best in the business at this time. And not everybody can play that role. That can be a little redundant and crowded. And monotonous, frankly. So this, for the place he is right now and how he's being booked with Sammy and being able to play off of Sammy, I like it, but I don't think it's the type of character that defines him down where he can't be taken seriously when he decides to take things seriously. William, back to you.
Yeah, and I think that I kind of agree with what you're saying, or I see where you're coming from. Like, I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, it's defining him down or that it's beneath him. Like, I'm one of the many or few, I don't know how many people liked it, but when he was doing the whole thing with Ezekiel last year, I loved that kind of stuff from him.
Yeah.
And he's really good at doing that sort of comedy. I think my criticism comes more from you know, that one note thing that I mentioned. It just kind of felt like it came out of nowhere, like, one week, like kind of like you mentioned, like he did it as kind of like a joke, and then they started just like harping on that every week. And yeah, it just kind of felt like it feels a little ham-fisted at times, I guess, or I guess in a way that comedy sometimes is. So, you know, it's subjective, I guess. But, yeah, I think that's all I had for tonight. So thank you guys for taking my call. Have a good
one. Thanks, Dwayne. Good conversation. Appreciate it. If you want to give us a call, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1, and that'll let us know on the switchboard that you want to be on the show. You can also still email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, we got Rob in Atlanta giving us a call. Rob, welcome. Did you by chance attend tonight?
No. Hey, Wade. Hey, Kelly. How you guys doing, man?
Good to talk to you, Rob. Thanks for calling. Been a while.
Good. Yeah, man. No, I didn't attend. Savannah's about 3.5 hours away from me. I'm in Metro Atlanta, so I didn't.
Gotcha.
I get off work at 8 o'clock.
That's a big trip.
I wasn't going to make that drive down there, but it seemed like it was a good crowd. I kind of enjoyed the show. I'm a little indifferent toward a couple of things. I had three main points that I wanted to bring up, and the first one was with Carmelo. So I don't understand how they seemingly invested a lot into tonight's presentation of Carmelo. You know, you have somebody in the audience that gets involved in a match, and then your mind automatically goes to, well, that person is going to, you know, have a big night, a successful night, or something like that. But I just don't understand why they would book him to lose clean. I know Finn Balor is supposed to be booked strong right now. He's going into this title match with Seth this weekend, and he's supposed to look strong. But it seems like, to me, I would have booked it to where, since Carmelo got involved in the Seth and Finn angle earlier to sort of save Seth from unnecessary damage with a chair, I would have assumed that Seth may have gotten involved in this match so that Carmelo wouldn't be beaten clean. And I understand, like I said, I understand that Finn is strong, but this is your NXT champion. And I feel like there was a better way to go about this. Not necessarily a DQ, but for him to lose clean like that, I didn't really enjoy that, especially with all of the hype surrounding his video packages tonight and his presentation. And he had a pretty good promo backstage. He fumbled over one line, I think, but he had a really good promo. He's got a lot of charisma. He looks directly in the camera. He's confident. He's got, you know, he's got a nice build for a smaller guy. And I just didn't agree with that booking decision. What do you think about that?
Kelly, do you want to comment on that framing of the use of Carmelo first? You've been covering him so much. What do you think about Rob's suggestion and framing of what they did tonight?
Oh, yeah. I've been one of his fervent supporters for a long time. I guess because I've seen so many NXT champions lose matches as champion, I'm kind of desensitized to it. I will say it's not as bad a situation as undefeated Karrion Kross losing a match, even though Hayes is about 1,000 times better than Karrion Kross at every aspect of pro wrestling.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but it was a more egregious thing because, like, they were working towards Kross's first loss against Samoa Joe, and it just got thrown away in such a silly match. I think a couple things could have been done here, but I will also talk about why they maybe weren't. I was surprised it wasn't a longer match. They gave this a
10-11 minutes.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. And I'm accustomed to Carmelo going more like 17 to 23 in big matches. And it, even without it being that, the fact that this had a commercial break in it made it seem very brief. And even if he was going to lose clean, I would have liked to see him kick out of some really bad situations, some real big – he could have won this match, quote-unquote,
yes,
by kicking out of major spots by Finn. I get keeping Finn strong here. I get having him go over somebody who matters without damaging anybody on the current roster, but I would have loved to see this go longer. And even if you do that, you can do the other thing that Wade and I were maybe kind of hinting at earlier, which is this could be the thing where he said, Seth, I was there for you. Where were you?
Mm-hmm.
So that could be a long-term thing that they're telling. And that wouldn't make me sad, because Melo's journey on NXT has succeeded because he started as a heel and he turned face in a way that it was like reminiscent of The Rock. He was just so cool. You kind of couldn't not do it. And that can kind of be what they do with him. And I wouldn't be against that. Now they showed him in his hype package as a babyface, but they can always change course there. So I will defend it in terms of that might have been the reason, but I definitely think this should have either gone longer or had no commercial break, because it made it really seem brief.
Rob, your feedback on that or anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, I'm going to move on to the next question. My feedback on that particular topic, I don't think he got a really good, to me, it seemed like on TV, he got a really good reaction. And now maybe that's due to the fact that Finn is such a great, well, Judgment Day are great heels right now. So maybe he got a good babyface rub from being in the ring with Finn. But I don't think it's time to sort of plant that seed of him and Seth having any static or friction yet, because he's just getting started with his babyface run, and I think people really do appreciate him, along with Trick being his kind of like his hype man, as babyfaces. And so I'm not sure if I would sort of plant that seed yet, but it is a valid point of like, come on, dude, like you weren't here for me. The same way last week when KO and Sammy didn't come out for Riddle, but then he came out for them tonight. I think, but anyway, okay, so my second question is, I'm a little bit, speaking of Riddle, I'm a little bit indifferent toward Riddle versus Gunther's build, because it seems to me that Riddle just came back, and he was sort of cold, and I think Riddle at this point in the hierarchy of the roster is better suited for a tag team. So I know that people are missing him and Randy's interactions at RK-Bro.
Mm-hmm.
So my question about Riddle is, if and when he ultimately loses this weekend to Gunther, do you run it back? Is this a 3-5 match series, or is this sort of a one, maybe a two off, and then you move on? And if you do move on from Gunther, where does Riddle go? Because I don't think he has the fanfare and the momentum to be thrusted into the next level of the card, like up in the main event again. He was only in the main event with RK-Bro. He was in the main event with Roman, but overall his presentation has been sort of like the – how can I categorize it? Maybe upper mid-card, maybe mid-card. But it seems like he's better suited in a tag team, because I don't think people have much interest in him going far enough to grab a championship, especially the Intercontinental belt. And I don't think he's ready to be thrusted back into the heavyweight picture yet. So where do you go with Riddle once he loses to Gunther? Do you turn him heel? Do you keep him babyface? Do you take him off TV for a while? Do you get a character change? Thoughts on that, please.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting topic. I don't see this as a long-term feud. I think Riddle's being fed to Gunther. I don't know who's next for him, so I could be wrong. And I'm still intrigued by a heel turn for Riddle myself. And if he gets eaten up by Gunther, having Riddle like get to show that side of himself, and then maybe time it for when Randy comes back, even if he can't. Well, I don't know if you want Randy back if he can't wrestle. That'll just tease the fans. But Randy comes back, he's like, "What's going on with you?" You know, and Riddle's like, "I thought you'd like this. You know, this. You know, I idolized you and whatever." I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do. I'm not going to do my Riddle impersonation. But maybe later tonight. No, I'm kidding. Kelly, your thoughts on No, I don't mean later on the show. I mean just like, you know, maybe I'd be better later tonight. It was just a joke about me smoking pot after the show to explain it to everybody, which I'm not going to be doing.
Oh, my God.
Explain my silly joke. It's not legal in Minnesota till August, so of course I have to wait. Kelly, your thoughts on Riddle.
I think most people know we're in the same town, so the obvious joke was, hey, I can make it over in like 5 minutes. Riddle is – he's definitely got a hard cap on him as a solo act because of the stoner thing. I just think it's really hard for him to be taken seriously at a main event level. But that said, putting him in a match with Gunther, I mean, that's a good recipe for a semi-comedic wrestler to come out of something more serious. So if they want to do something more serious with Riddle, having him go into that match and lose, but put up a really valiant fight against the fighter on the roster right now, I think is a good way to do that if they want to. And they can turn him here. That's not the feeling I've gotten, but I think he could come out of this as a character with a sharper edge. Riddle is not necessarily appointment TV to me right now. It's amazing how he can go through these months-long segments where he's one of the things I look forward to most, but it is always when he's in a team. It was, RK-Bro, and of course when he was doing his thing with Pete Dunne in NXT. I mean, those were the times, but I know that he can main event and look at home. He was in the main event of one of my favorite matches of that year in NXT, which was the Fight Pit with Timothy Thatcher. So he can keep it. He can play it straight and be a top guy, but that's just not what they're asking him to do. I don't think there's any chance he wins this match, but I will be very interested to see where he goes past this.
All right. Yeah. Rob, anything else you want to bring up or any follow-up for that?
Yeah. Yeah, I got one more question, but just to caveat on that, I don't think that Riddle is heel material yet. Maybe in like 3 or 5 years, but he's such, like you just alluded to, he's a stoner character, and like people tend to like that silly comedic side of him being a stoner, and I don't know if a heel turn is in his immediate future, and I would love to see Riddle have a change of attitude, but I don't want him, like you just said, Kelly, I don't want him to be the guy that puts up a valiant, I don't want him to be the guy that puts up a valiant effort for the big champions like Roman and Gunther just to eat a loss, like eventually, because he's really good. He's really talented. He's got a great moveset. So I don't want him to be sort of typecast into that, like, you know, that baby face that just comes up short every time. So
Yeah.
And then my last point, and then I'll let you go. Ronda and Raquel. When I was watching the match, I didn't really see a lot of chemistry. I saw some spots where they didn't know what they were going to do. I think they had to communicate and maybe they forgot their spots or something, but I didn't see a lot of chemistry there. But I do think that Raquel is amazing. She's got a great look. She plays to the crowd as a really good baby face, like a big baby face, she's like the biggest woman in the division. So, but my question is, with regards to Raquel, do you think that she is eventually, like the story, like every story is told this way, that her and Liv are going to have some sort of beef and one of them end up turning heel? Because I can't imagine Liv turning heel, because people like Liv as a babyface, a crazy erratic like babyface. But then Raquel has been presented as such a smiley, jovial, baby-faced giant that people like, and there's not a lot of bigger women in the women's division other than her, and maybe Charlotte is pretty tall. I think she's like 5'10 or something, and then Even mommy, she's pretty big. But anyway,
yeah.
My point is, where do you see this Raquel Liv union going? Do you think Raquel is better suited in attacking the Liv, or are they going to have the courage to pull the trigger and make her a key player in that division?
Kelly, I think Raquel's on a path to being a key player in the division as a singles. What do you think? What do you think about what they've done with her so far, and what do you think about the options that Rob presented?
I think it's possible that they could try to run with her for a while. I'm glad they're taking some time. She was in NXT for, I will say, roughly 2 years, and I'll be honest, I never really saw her improve. She wasn't bad when she started, and she just kind of wasn't bad when she finished.
It's both a compliment and an insult, you can take it either way. Yeah,
indeed, I want it to be both. She's, I think, got a hard cap on what she can do. I think that her real future is in being a Kane for a long time, whether that means being a babyface or a heel, it doesn't matter. But I think that being the unbeatable force who often gets beat is probably in her future, but I would not be against a couple of title reigns before that if it seems like it's the right time and everything's hitting correctly. Tonight's match with them, I was dreading. I saw that it was going to be on the show, and I just thought, oh, neither one of these is really the type who can call a match. And then it was quick. That was good. But I think that a tag team is 100% the right place for her right now. I think a tag team with somebody as magnetic as Liv is exactly the right place for her right now. And I actually agree with you. She really does make a better baby face than a heel. And that is probably confounding to some of those bookers, because there's no doubt they would prefer, when they look at her, to be like, can't you just be really, really easy to hate as a character? But she doesn't do that as well as she does the charming smile. She just looks friendly. I don't know.
Yeah.
She's very good at that. So that is, you know, that's the problem that they have. They can't turn this person that they would love to turn and have it work. Because they'd love to have her as a monster heel against Liv, but I don't see that either. I think Liv is honestly the one who turns easier of those two, but they don't want to do that either.
And it's just a challenge, as Rob pointed out, the size difference in having Raquel be the big baby face against almost inevitably smaller heels, and that's tough. I'd like to see Raquel Rodriguez not look like her boss told her, smile more. Be sure to smile out there. And I want to see a wider range of human emotions from her. And I don't like the prevailing thought on her is she smiles. And I want to see more of a fighter demeanor from her. We get it sometimes, but it doesn't feel natural. It feels like that's what she's told to do. And to me, that's just something, you know, I don't know if it's just her natural kind of instinct or if that's something that she's being told to do. But I think she's got to just show some more range, and then we'll have a better idea of her potential character-wise. But I do think she's on a course to be, like you said, you know, kind of Kane, for lack of better example, but that's a decent example. You know, somebody who's around and can play a face or a heel and be versatile in that way, but be bigger than most of her opponents. I think she's like you said, not bad. I think she's fine in the ring. I wish they had put more time in. I wish they were given more time and thus had a chance to do more and show more by putting a lot of thought and planning and maybe even some practice into having a more substantial match that didn't play down to what people think is the weakness in both Ronda and Raquel, you know, which is you need someone else to carry them. I wish they had something mapped out and went, you know, 3-4 minutes longer before either of them lost. In this case, obviously Raquel was the one in a short match is going to lose, which is a little bit of an excuse. Rob, anything else you want to say on that?
Yeah, just closing remarks on that. it's really hard when you have a big baby face, and the conundrum is, well, she's pretty and she's camera ready and she smiles, kind of like with Nia Jax, they tried to really force her as baby face. It's the conundrum is like, oh, she's got a pretty face and she's like smiling, but she's bigger than everybody and she could just be a monster heel, but that's not in her personality. So, but yeah, that's all I had tonight, guys. I really appreciate the call. Thanks.
Great, Rob. Good conversation. Appreciate you calling. Call again.
All right. Thanks, bro.
Yep, you bet. All right. Up next, area code 912. 912, go ahead, state your name and the city you're calling from.
Corey from Savannah.
Hey, Corey. Let me guess. You attended tonight?
Well, yes, I did. Wait.
Awesome to hear from you. Thanks for calling. So what stood out to you from the live experience? What was this open with? Pretty open-ended question for you.
The crowd. We were hot. We were white. It was a good crowd tonight. It was a real hot crowd.
What were they most into? My kind of first guess is Cody and singing Seth's song, but elaborate. Tell us what stood out to you. Did anything surprise you in terms of what the crowd was into? Obviously booing Dominic right up there.
That was the first thing. Dom was he had major heat. Like the heat tonight was crazy. I was like, are they turning up the volume on the microphones or what? But it was he had heat. But like starting off with the most crowd reaction was Cody, then Seth, and Ronda and. Ronda and Raquel, they didn't get no reactions really, but the most was Cody.
Talk about the next tier of reactions and if anything was more or less than you expected or that you think has been the case in other cities. Corey, still with us? Oh, actually, Corey just dropped off. I'm going to give him a second to call back because it sounded like his connection might have been a little bad. Let's see if the number pops up quickly here. Was it something I said, Kelly? Do you think I said something wrong there?
No, that seemed pretty fair. And
I was so hoping you'd play into the bit and go, yeah, your tone was really, really. I can see why he hung up with
you. Oh. Sorry, I needed to play heel there, and the I don't, I mean, that's what I'm for. I will say that the hot crowd came through on the show. That was something I noted, actually, as I was watching. Not just hot, but sustained for longer. It seems like we get that inevitable third-hour drop-off, and they were hot even then.
Yeah. Okay, so Kyle, hang tight with us. I don't want to take you in case Corey. That's
not needed.
All right. So Kyle, hold tight. I want to be able to keep an eye out for Corey calling back. So we'll take an email because we can kind of pause this in midstream if we need to. JB from Detroit. Said, hey, team, it seems like they've slowly been hinting at Becky Rhea feud for the last few weeks. Is this the match we'll get at SummerSlam? Kelly, we can get that regardless of whether Becky wins Money in the Bank, right?
Yes, we can get this anytime, and it will have been gotten to organically. I think they're planting enough seeds. Sometimes they plant the seeds to make you okay with the match you're going to get. This time they're planting so many, they don't have to waste Money in the Bank on her because she's got a match all lined up. She's got a feud all lined up and budding with the champion already. So I kind of like – I just think that this can work – as the WrestleMania match, they have kind of I mean, the nice problem they've had of late is that very, very strong women have been displaced from the main event scene because there have been so many choices to be in those two matches. But I like this one as even longer term than that. But I don't know. When is it going to be? Is it late August this time? If it's still 8 weeks away.
No, it's early August.
It's early August. Oh, I think it's too soon. Maybe I'm being spoiled by all this really strong long-term storytelling that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I want it to be even longer than that before we get this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously they are planting seeds for that. And I think we're in I think we're going to get that, and I think we might get it by SummerSlam, and I think the Money in the Bank winner can take a different course than immediately cashing in and being part of that. So I think some of what we're seeing here is we end up with, you know, Becky not winning Money in the Bank, but still earning a title shot another way.
Yeah, and they can have her do it a lot of different ways, and then maybe she can have her real-life dream of not having to be in the Money in the Bank match anymore. I don't know. Because it's beneath her. Just running with the bit from earlier. So, yeah, I don't know. She didn't tell me that personally or anything. So, yeah, I'm torn on it because I want to see it, but I think the story has legs.
Yeah, yep. Okay, so we don't see Corey calling back yet. Maybe his phone ran out of juice, too. That could happen. Okay, number two from JB. Mello losing clean before his title defense tomorrow was an interesting decision. We covered that, a decent amount. But how do you feel as somebody who covers NXT? Do you feel protective of the brand that the champion is losing? Or is it, it's Finn Balor. There's no shame in losing to Finn Balor. And the priority as important as NXT and USA Network ratings are and the Gold Rush show is, it is a secondary title. It's not treated as an equal. And they want to get across that Finn Balor is good enough to beat the NXT champion clean going into a major title match against Seth Rollins.
I used to be more protective than I am now because I was there week one of NXT as its own show on the network. I've been there since the beginning, and I've been covering it for us for 5-7 years, whatever it is. So I used to be very protective of it. I'm less so now. I'm more realistic, and I'm more thinking long term. And part of me thinking more long term is because they are thinking more long term with their storytelling than they were a few years ago. And I really meant it when I said it was much more egregious when they did this with Karrion Kross because he was undefeated and they had him job in a match with no backstory to a guy that was one of the low baby faces on the totem pole at the time in Jeff Hardy. He was not an important piece of the main event scene or anywhere near it at the time. So that match was apropos of nothing. They just threw it out there. So I'm less worried about that. My issues were that if you're going to put all this effort into getting people to know him, just show that match in its entirety. If you're only going to give it 10 minutes, show it in its entirety, or else just go longer with it and have him fight some stuff off before he inevitably has to take that loss. I'm very realistic about this, even though I never liked Cross. I was still very protective of the way that was being told because of the story being told at the time and the situation surrounding it. And I like Hayes as if he was my own son.
All right, and finally, JB says, last week's NXT got a big ratings pop from the Seth Rollins-Bron Breakker title match. Do you think these ratings pops are sustainable when it isn't a star as big as Seth Rollins? Will Carmelo Hayes against Baron Corbin get anywhere near the pop, or will there be diminishing returns? So, Kelly, I want you to launch into a couple things here. One, I want to get your thoughts on what they did with Bron Breakker on Raw last week, because we can get to talk to you about it on this show, and how the match went, if you think it helped or hurt Bron's stock. and if you liked how Seth, what Seth gave in that match. Number two, although that was sort of multi-pronged, but the big number two picture, should they have done more to hype Baron Corbin as a challenger and to give a story and frame it a little more if they are trying to pop viewership numbers for NXT? Because, I mean, you can argue, yeah, they plug Gold Rush and they said it's, you know, a big deal, but the champion lost and now he's going to be wrestling somebody whose whole gimmick on the main roster is he can't win and he's sad and pathetic. He's a sad and pathetic loser. Is this like almost worst case scenario coming into this week in terms of what they did to try to get people to care enough to tune in on Tuesday?
I will say that these rating spikes are not sustainable, even if it's as somebody as big as Seth. Like a lot of those people, I don't expect to see any big number. Or he's just saying, if you're going to keep stunt casting every week, I guess is what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think that's tough. I was very – last week on PWT Talks NXT, I said, I am the guy who does – I pay very little attention to ratings. When I hear about them from you, from the site, from wherever, I take some heed. But it doesn't – naturally interest me that much. I was very interested to see, though, what happened on Gold Rush. So,
well, last week, for context, they drew 700. They averaged 773,000 viewers. That was up almost 200,000 over the week before, which is 581,000. Now, the previous couple weeks, they did 615 and 607. So they were in the 600s, but it was a big jump. Sidebar question on that. Do you think the NXT show was good enough otherwise to hold some of those people and go, you know what, I had a lot of choices during the week, but NXT won me over. I want to watch this more often. Will there be some sustained new viewership because of what they did leading up to that main event? Or do you look at last week's show as a lost opportunity?
I think last week's episode of NXT was genuinely the best in a very long time. I kind of gushed about it on the show. Wrestling-wise, especially in the middle, there was some stuff to be desired. It was uneven, but you're going to get some uneven wrestling on NXT. As a pro wrestling show, making people want to see the next pro wrestling show, it was a massive success. It was very, very strong at presenting and finishing the feuds they had going while also deeply strengthening the ones coming the next week. NXT is not always – they're not always thinking about that kind of storytelling, to like the constant hooks. And especially in the HBK era, it has been – that has been one of the parts that's been really lacking. And this show did it so well. There were times I thought something's got to have changed. Somebody else has to be in the mix and working on this. I just thought they really put – their best foot forward in a lot of different ways. Like, they have definitely had a lot of weeks that had better match for match wrestling than last week, but I'd be hard pressed to say there was a more complete episode of a wrestling show that would hook people in the last 6 months than last week's.
Yeah. So Seth and Breaker, what's Breaker's, like, where is Breaker a year from now?
I think a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years from now, he's essentially playing this character. I thought that, let me be real honest. I thought that Breaker as a babyface was a dead end and wasted effort. I really thought it was. I thought that his reign was so boring that I often forgot who the champion was until he showed up on any given week. I thought that his constant yelling didn't do him any favors as a babyface, and just thought he came off as not so bright and kind of a big, tough, mean-looking, bully-looking brute who was kind of hard to cheer for. When they turned him, It worked so immediately. I just was like, how are they not listening and watching? I mean, they're seeing this character. They're seeing the responses to him, but they're also seeing what Braun does. He kind of only has one speed. He's not going to be a versatile player at all.
Right.
But I think he can be of extreme value. You can have him dabble in the main event when you bring him up, see what happens. I don't think it's going to take in an enormous way, not the way that they would like. They might push him to that level anyway because they seem committed to doing so. I don't think he's all that, but I think he can be an extremely strong long-term player, kind of like a – I think he can be like a Baron Corbin who wins more often than Baron Corbin. And if everything breaks right, he can be a champion. Let me say about – and even a world champion as a heel. And let me say about the match that he had with Seth that it wasn't bad necessarily, but I was very, very stunned at how little offense Bron Breakker got in the match. He was dominated. And I get Seth's your main roster champion, but the Bron Breakker character only works if he's on offense most of the time and decimating his opponent most of the time. And Seth can sell, so he's right there, just ready to do it. But Seth got almost all the offense. Yeah. It was a strange match.
Yeah. All right. We did not hear back from Corey, so I'm thinking his cell phone. Or he lost, you know, he might be driving home and lost the signal. But we will bring Kyle on here in a, we've gone more, well over an hour and a half here, so we'll probably wrap up here. Kyle, welcome to the show. Thanks for holding. What is on your mind about Raw tonight and our conversation so far?
So this whole should Becky win the briefcase and that, this whole discussion about that is so, it's, here's my thoughts about this, is that, you know, when Becky and Rhea had their face-off, and he'd been doing that for a while now anyway, I like what Becky had to say, that Becky doesn't need the championship. What Becky should have said that is that Rhea needs Becky, because that's what it kind of, what it is, because Rhea Ripley has been saying this for weeks now, but Rhea Ripley has been doing nothing credible as champion. This whole Judgment Day and Dominik scene, while entertaining for some people, I can really care less about her and Dominik really, but Rhea Ripley has really done nothing credible because there's no one for her to face besides Becky Lynch. I've been saying this for weeks. I've seen this for months. It's been months now at this point. And it's just, it's Becky Lynch or no one else. The problem is that still that she is still in this Trish feud, and it's not working. But you hear that reaction from Becky like tonight was like, she's the biggest star in the ladder match. She may not win, maybe Iya, which is fine. I could be satisfied with Iya winning the briefcase. I'll be fine. But it just feels like to me, especially the reason why I was still thinking that Becky will win the briefcase because of her interview with Corey Graves earlier, or yesterday. I listened to her again earlier today about saying that this is the one. Seeing that she got robbed of the Money in the Bank the past few years, and that, you know, she is getting older. She already has a kid already. Who knows how long she's going to be around for. So it's just, I do kind of want, so for that reason, I do want to win the briefcase. I think also selfishly, I'll be there next week for Raw. So it'd be cool to see her with that briefcase if she wins it. But, and for Rhea herself too. She's facing Natalya next week. I get to see Natalya Rhea in person. Yay! That's true. You know, that's not. Rhea Ripley and Natalya again. Like, I don't understand why they're doing this again. I feel bad for Rhea because she has done nothing. There's nothing for Rhea at all creatively besides her messing around with the men. Still, I don't understand this. I don't know if it's because Becky is the only logical babyface that is credible for Rhea Ripley at this point right now, because they teased Raquel last week, but they're not going to do that, it looks like, because they're doing a tag team match with her and Liv, and that's fine. But yeah, I just feel like that is just so for Rhea Ripley. Does she need to get away from the Judgment Day for just a little bit to be part of the women's division so she feels like an actual threat?
Kelly, what do you think? Is that important?
I think he got pretty close to nailing it there without actually saying it. It's not Rhea who has the credibility problem. It's the division that has the credibility problem. There's not a lot of names to plug in there in the meantime, and they're throwing out her and Natalya all these times because Natalya can give her a decent match and can also just obviously lengthen her championship reign. I think that this would be probably the single most dangerous time to take her out of a group like Judgment Day, because that's what's keeping her on TV. She's doing these scenes, entangling with the men, because she's really the only one who can do that credibly. And I think that this would be a very bad time for her to split from that group and to split from Dominic.
Well, I'm not
saying
split
it
up, but I just saying just do something different. She's still a part of Judgment Day. I just want her to do something different, but I don't want her to be broke up with Judgment Day. I just want her to do something different, not split up for them. That's just what I'm saying.
Right. Okay. Then that makes sense. We want to see her do something, but in the absence of her being able to do her own thing, it is good for her that they've found a way to keep her on TV and to keep her doing something that serves the show, even though it doesn't serve her championship reign. I do think that they've got to, in this next round of call-ups and in the most recent round of call-ups, they have to take more care that they're not just throwing women out there cold, not just giving them a 3-minute match and having them trade wins and then 6 months later saying, why isn't Shotzi more popular? Because he took away her tank and didn't do anything with her. It's a big enough – there are enough women in that – in the field, in the company, that they should be able to have – challengers lined up for a year for Rhea Ripley if they want to give her that long a reign. But there isn't that obvious person. But I think that if you're going to have that issue, it's a damn good thing she brings value to the show in another way.
Kyle, back to you.
And then this whole, If Becky does get screwed at Money in the Bank on Saturday, I can also see, along with this, the whole, I can see on Monday next week that Lita can come back and that'll be the tag match for Becky. It'll be Becky and Trish Becky and Lita versus Trish, and that'll be for SummerSlam. I can see that too. And again, this whole damage control stuff too. I got any more specials. Ross, so I can talk about this. I just feel like that. If the plan is to do, because I keep hearing there's so many theories about the SmackDown side of the SmackDown women's matches I can think of in my head is that I hear it's going to be either Io or Bailey 1-on-1 at SummerSlam, and then it'll be Bianca and Charlotte, and then Asuka gets involved in that, but she'll seem like a third wheel in that habit. But then I hear Io and Asuka for SummerSlam, which that could be good having Bianca and Charlotte, but then Bailey's off the card. Even really went that for her. So the whole SmackDown Women's Division side of those matches could be interesting. So what do you think about that dynamic of how that's going to turn out? What do you think the end result is, at least on the SmackDown side, for the matches for the SmackDown side? Because Raw feels like it's kind of covered in some respects. What do you think about that? Because I had that thought for a while.
Sure, yeah. I'll throw it to you on. Yeah. Kelly, I'll throw it to you on that too.
On the SmackDown women's side?
For Money in the Bank, yeah.
In terms of who can actually win that.
It's about the potential matches for SummerSlam after Money in the Bank, because I don't know because it's all jumbled up in my mind, because it's either going to, because I keep hearing people say that it needs to be Io and Asuka for SummerSlam, which should be good, but now you leave Bayley off. You really let her off SummerSlam, and they're having this thing between Bayley and EO. You would think it would be for SummerSlam. Then you also have Charlotte and Bianca. That could be for SummerSlam, but then you leave Asuka off the card or just plug in Asuka in that into a triple threat match between that. So that's my question, that how is that going to play out? Because it's like, because Asuka just seems like the third wheel if that happens, but then Asuka and Bayley will seem like kind of left out if they're not a part of, because it's all about Charlotte and Bianca and EO and Bayley, but then Asuka just seems like the odd person out. So where does that lead?
Sure.
Where does that lead?
So I think it's important to understand WWE sees Charlotte and Bianca Belair as bigger stars than Asuka and Io Sky and Bayley, but that doesn't mean that they won't treat those three as important. I do think you have to sort of prepare yourself for Asuka to be a third wheel, because I don't think they look at her as somebody who they can do a lot with on TV in a one-on-one situation. And so I think they think the best use of her is to be, you know, in a three-way or four-way situation where the other two or three are doing most of the talking. But they do, I think they have good options, whatever they do at Money in the Bank, with Bayley and Io Sky in particular. I think they have good options for SummerSlam if they want to load up the show with multiple women's matches. I don't think they have to pull the trigger on Bayley and Io Sky breaking up at Money in the Bank or a turn. They could, but they might not. They might save it for SummerSlam and have a storyline there, which then would free up Charlotte and Bianca to do their thing. Maybe Asuka's involved as a third wheel, as you say, Kyle. Maybe she's not on the show, or they do something completely different with her by then. I mean, as you're talking about all the options and all the talent, I mean, I don't think it's come into focus yet where you can for sure say, yeah, like this they're going to do at the expense of everything else. It just doesn't seem that they've shown their hand on that yet, even though we're, you know, what I think it's first week of August. There's still plenty of time to tell multiple stories. That gives us enough time after Saturday to tell new stories and really establish things. So, I mean, you know, you're reading things and people are guessing things, but that doesn't mean they're not going to surprise us with some things. Kelly, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the big ball up in the air is when they pull the trigger on Bayley and Io, because that doesn't have to be at SummerSlam, and if it's not, it frees up everybody to do something else. I certainly hope that Asuka isn't the one who gets left out. I've seen her be the odd person out before, but she is just about my favorite wrestler in the world, so I hope that doesn't happen. I wouldn't be surprised if that did happen, or if they put her in a three-way, but organically it seems like Kyle has landed on the most obvious places right now for those matches, the obvious matches that could take place if they're going to do them all right now, but we know that they might not do a large number of women's matches on SummerSlam, especially if they keep treating it as a show that they can keep to a reasonable amount of time as they have the last couple of years, after a couple of years of doing 5.5-hour shows or whatever they were. So I don't know. Dakota's not anywhere near coming back, right? Because she could come back and lengthen that story, but I don't think that she's in any position to come back. And with her not being able to do that, they can either wait until she is and then pull the trigger then, or do it whenever. And then when Dakota comes back, she can side with, I'll just say, whoever's on the heel side. Because I think that's what they'll do. But yes, I, as of today, would be surprised if we didn't see Bayley and EO at SummerSlam, because it just seems like Money in the Bank is such a good place for a team to break up. But I don't know. Teams can break up at barbershops, so I guess it could be anywhere.
All right. Kyle, anything else you want to bring up before we wrap up with you?
So I think the thing is about last we'll talk about was the Seth Rollins and his his match of battle should be fine and all, but I think of course Rollins was going to retain. I think what I'm interested in is Cody Rhodes actually, because Cody Rhodes is going to face Brock Lesnar, and like I said weeks ago, Lesnar's going to be on Raw next week, so I'm not sure that's what he talked about on Raw anyway today, and so you know they're going to do that. So since that's going to be the match for SummerSlam, there for Seth Rollins himself, I keep hearing like Drew McIntyre may come back, and that's going to be the SummerSlam match. So that's my last question to you. So do you think that Drew McIntyre is going to come back at Money in the Bank on Saturday, and that will kick off Rollins and McIntyre for SummerSlam? But that's the day's roll call.
Thanks. I like the idea of Drew McIntyre coming back as a heel and going after Seth. I think that feels SummerSlam worthy, and I'm not sure what else jumps off the page for me. I think Drew being away and coming back under those circumstances as a big star, not just, you know, in something less than. Like, I've always thought with Drew, it just doesn't – he either has to be in the main event or it just doesn't feel quite right. It works when he's with Sheamus and that kind of thing. But for the most part, I think you want to have Drew positioned as a top star, because I think he either is or he looks like he's a top star who's failing. Kelly, your thoughts?
Yeah, he comes off to me the same way, where I don't know where to put him in my head. I actually kind of forget about him when he's not at the top. So that's not somewhere where you want to be. So do we know for sure that he's coming back at all? Because there sure is a lot of rumor out there. But
yeah,
assuming,
but I mean, do we want to know for sure he's coming back? No.
I don't want to know for sure.
Right. So
yes, I like the idea of him coming back heel too, making a splash, because otherwise it'll seem like running in place. I don't totally have a you can't go back again mentality, but it seems like the landscape has changed enough that they could find some reason for him to be bitter about things and to start his supervillain story.
Yeah. Yep. Very good. Thanks, Kyle. Good topics there. Okay. So just a couple rapid fire things to wrap up. Did you have any thoughts on the Shinsuke Ricochet match with Bronson Reed? And these are all people who went through NXT. How do you feel about them? Shinsuke first, Ricochet second, and Bronson being the most recent addition. So I'm probably most intrigued with your thoughts on what they're doing with Bronson so far.
Glad to see they're taking some time with Bronson. He did some okay stuff in NXT in his original run. He went to New Japan, so I continued seeing every match that he worked. And they really were high on him. They couldn't lock him down to a contract because it's hard to do sometimes with the people who are visiting. But they put him over Okada. He did a lot of stuff over there. They really liked him, and we saw him in a lot of long-form main event-style matches, and it was good stuff. So I'm glad they're taking their time with him. I thought the use of him in the Elimination Chamber was exactly what I thought. He went out first, but it took everybody to take him down, and that, I think, is an okay thing to do if you're a monster and you're not going to win. So I kind of like what they've done, and I kind of like that they're taking their time with him. With Ricochet and Nakamura, I'm just not surprised when they win. I'm not surprised when they lose. It just seems like, I don't know, I would have preferred Shinsuke won this, but I'm a massive Shinsuke fan. And Ricochet, I know we've talked about a lot, and just he kind of is always the same, and he peaked a long time ago. We like him, but it seems like his peak is what it is. So he'll do something awesome in the Money in the Bank match, and he will not win. That's what he'll do. Shinsuke, I feel like, has a better chance, but I wouldn't put my money on him either. His gear was cool. I don't know what else you want from that match, though.
And finally for me, it's just Tommaso Ciampa. What do you think of his promo tonight, his explanation for being on the shelf, having time to think, what am I doing, hang out with Miz? And then he never called him when he was sick, which we've heard, you know, that's a go-to comment from people after injury layoffs that the person they were aligned with before didn't call them enough. What do you think of Ciampa and where he is at the stage of his career on the main roster?
Ciampa's not a spring chicken, so if they're going to do anything with him, they better get to doing it. But I like bringing him back. This was really, really a straightforward one. This was a story that tells itself coming back from injury after he's been working with Miz. They didn't really have to put a lot of thought into this to get it right, and I think they did get it right. Ciampa is always a good promo, even if he doesn't get the most thrilling content, and this was okay content. I very much like what they did with the match, dragging this out further and having this be a non-match that gets put off to a later date to get a little bit more time out of this. Because, of course, Ciampa would want to face Miz right away, but it'll be better if they can actually work toward it and give the fans something to latch onto with Ciampa. Because I think they saw how good he can be as a hype man because he's just so good on the stick. But now they can see how good he can be as a babyface because he's very good on both sides.
And he's going to be a utility babyface, your number 5, 6, 7 baby.
Yeah.
You know, on the roster, but that's fine. You know, he can be a bit of a gatekeeper, but he's going to have good matches. He's going to give straightforward, intense, credible promos. He's going to be likable. He's not going to jump off the page, but he's going to make some good money and I think have a good chapter of his career if he can stay healthy. And getting away from Miz, I think, is a good thing to establish the last couple of weeks. And I think him explaining himself afterwards is good, as he did tonight. I was glad to see that they gave him time to follow up on that.
Yeah, and I think in a year or two, maybe his cap can be one of the guys in the triple threat at WrestleMania that is in the style of Gunther, Sheamus, Drew. I think you can put him in that because he can be hyper violent if you need him to be. So maybe that's what his ceiling is there.
Very good, Rich. Kelly, is there anything else you want to say about Raw tonight? Anything else we didn't get to?
I think you covered the two that I would have brought up. I don't have anything to say on Maxine. So,
what, you don't? What do you want?
I will say only this. Why is she the one they brought up that fast? She was not ready. I'll just say it was a good show. Made me excited for future shows. I don't watch Raw in its entirety often when I don't have to, but this made me want to do it a lot more.
Very good. Well, Kelly, just close with a plug for what's going on tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night is Gold Rush Part 2. Last week I did the recap, and this time Bruce will be doing the recap, but we'll both be talking about it after the show. Carmelo Hayes versus Baron Corbin, a main event anywhere in the world, folks. It's a weird one, but they really hyped up a good show for tomorrow. So check us out on PWT Talks NXT, either live or stream it the next day when it goes up, because if it's anything like last week, it's going to be a heck of a good show.
There will be a link to the live stream in Bruce's NXT report, I bet.
Oh, I think there will.
Yes. So, everybody join them for that. Kelly, thanks. It's been great.
Yes, indeed. Always have a good time with you here, and thanks for bringing me on when the show was quite good.
Absolutely. I planned it that way.
I knew you did.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate the callers, emailers, and our very brief on-site correspondent with a little bit of a window into what it was like at the building. Wish we could have had more time. Corey, feel free to email us if you're listening back to this, and we can catch up on some of your observations because I'm sure you had some you wished you had a chance to share. In fact, you can call Friday after SmackDown, and we'll just do a delayed on-site report with you. Until next time, Wade Keller thanking all of you, the listeners, and signing off.